With investors seeking ways to mitigate some of their portfolio risk by allocating capital to uncorrelated streams of return, this is a particularly good time for us to talk about the thoughtful strategies institutional and ultra-high net worth investors have been using for decades to allocate to alternative assets like gold and Bitcoin. In today's uncertain economic environment, traditional portfolios face mounting challenges, from persistent inflation to geopolitical instability and rising concerns over currency debasement. Against this backdrop, both gold and Bitcoin appear to have emerged as compelling diversifiers for core portfolios. The how is what we're going to talk about this episode, and here to talk about it is Mike Philbrick, CEO at Resolve Asset Management Global, co-founders, along with newfound research, of the Return Stacked ETF suite of return stacking overlay solutions, which aim to solve for the most innocuous and toughest of all traditional diversification and behavioral investing dilemmas. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here, Pierre. And what a mouthful that was. Well done, sir.
So, Mike, by now we're all well aware of the tactical reasons or desire to invest in gold and Bitcoin. So instead, let's talk about the case for strategic diversification in gold and Bitcoin. What are some of the various diversification cases for adding gold and Bitcoin to traditional portfolios?
Well, as you mentioned, both gold and Bitcoin are these supply-constrained assets. You know, so they often present hedges against, as you mentioned, inflation, currency debasement, and, you know, the monetization of debt. In a fiat currency world, we can print unlimited currency, if you will, but we can't print gold and we can't print Bitcoin. You know, if we look at gold, it has a centuries-old track record of preserving purchasing power, especially in inflationary periods or geopolitical uncertain periods. And then Bitcoin tends to be the new kid on the block. You know, with a fixed supply of 21 million coins, it's increasingly being viewed as that gold, that digital gold analog. And, you know, Bitwise has an interesting stat. 95% of Bitcoin has been mined, yet it's not in 95% of portfolios at this point. So these two asset classes are becoming, they're going from being fringe to being foundational, given the regime shift that we've seen along these geopolitical and central bank lines that we've talked about.
I didn't realize that 95% of all Bitcoin has already been minted.
Yep.
That's quite an interesting statistic. Gold has historically been a core component of pretty much all-weather portfolio strategies. Mm-hmm. 25% of Harry Brown's permanent portfolio, Ray Dalio's Bridgewater, all of which have played an important role over longer periods of time in making portfolios more resilient, as well as providing those uncorrelated returns and risk exposure against equities and bonds. The same could be said, of course, for Bitcoin, given its finite supply as an inflation hedge asset over the long term. None of these diversification benefits matter if you don't implement them, or on the other hand, if you have, you aren't able to stick to it, which has been a perennial problem for pretty much the last 15 years, at least, if not longer. And two core considerations that go along with that, of course, there are long periods of underperformance where, you know, investors just can't take it anymore, and often bail at exactly the wrong moment, or higher volatility. Even though that higher volatility is uncorrelated, investors have a really hard time sticking to either of, gold in particular, but with more historical context. Have had difficulty sticking to owning that all-weather allocation to gold. But on the other hand, now, Mike, how have institutions been adding to gold and Bitcoin more recently, gold historically and Bitcoin more recently, to their portfolios without giving up or trading away their existing core holdings?
Right. It's an interesting point you make. Brian Portnoy I think he coined the phrase diversification is always having to say you're sorry. Because you're diversified, you're going to have something in the portfolio that's not performing well. And diversifiers like gold and Bitcoin can lag for long periods of time, as you point out, or they can have kind of large drawdowns. And those key behavioral challenges make an allocation and sticking with that allocation very difficult. And what typically happens is if you have the allocation and it goes down, you end up selling it in the drawdown, thereby locking in those risks and giving up the potential for returns. And that's, a lot of times people don't sell it at the highs or sell it when it's treating them really well. They panic at the lows.
And you get some of those great loss carry forward.
Yes. If it's in a taxable account, they can have that benefit, but they feel the FOMO, when they need to get in, and then they feel the panic in the drawdowns. And so return stacking is a form of portable alpha. And this is what you refer to how the institutions have been doing it for decades, where they add non-correlated diversified assets to portfolios, but they stack them on top of those exposures that generally the clients and the pension funds know, love, and trust. And that's your equity and bond exposures. So return stacking seeks to solve this dilemma by adding the exposure to something like gold and Bitcoin without forcing a sale of those familiar assets, right? So you keep the things you know, love, and trust, and you stack on top of it these diversifying assets. Another key issue, of course, is getting that position sizing correct. So you don't want to have too much, and you don't want to have too little. Sort of like the bears in the porridge. You want it just right.
Yeah.
And so, Bitwise has an interesting paper that goes through how an allocation to Bitcoin of 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, and 5% actually impacts the portfolio returns. And in fact, turns out that until you get to 5% Bitcoin, you actually reduce the risk of the portfolio and increase the returns. When you get to about 5% in Bitcoin, you start to edge up the risk a little bit, but you do get an awful lot of return in that. And that's that one key area that while we talked about all of those, the inflation hedges, the crisis alpha that gold provides, that sovereign hedge, long-term diversification, we see a lot of those same characteristics in Bitcoin, that nice low correlation to traditional assets. But what Bitcoin provides, it's a bit unique, is that asymmetric upside, that convex return potential in a world that's starved for these types of assets that provide this monetary debasement protection.
I remember the conversation I had with Rodrigo, and that was that you can improve a portfolio dramatically by adding assets to that portfolio that are equally volatile, or in some cases more volatile, but volatile at different times, just to put it simply.
Right. And that's that non-correlation.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly.
That's,
yeah.
And that's in particular what happens when you allocate to Bitcoin and gold, and the overall portfolio improves. Now, gold is not more volatile than stocks. It is more volatile than bonds. But I think your point is particularly evident when you look at this Bitcoin asset that's had a volatility of 80. Now, to put that in context, stocks have a volatility. That's, the amount that they're going to fluctuate daily for no particular reason, of about 15. Gold, 10 to 12. Bitcoin was over 100, but it's slowly dropping to 80 in this past year. It's been around 60. And as this asset becomes institutionalized and both those ETF markets and futures markets start to participate more in that, we would think that the volatility of Bitcoin will continue to decline. And this comes really, really relevant when you're thinking about, well, how do I implement this? How do I take that, the U.S. equity in this case, because I don't want to give that up, that exposure up, because I don't want to have that tracking error. And then how should I stack upon that holding this exposure to gold and Bitcoin? And that's what RSX seeks to do, the return stack stocks, Bitcoin, and gold ETF.
Right.
It seeks to give you that 100% U.S. exposure, so you're getting that all of that beta back that you know, love, and trust in the S&P 500.
Yeah. So let's talk about RSSX, the Return Stack U.S. Stocks and Gold Bitcoin Strategy ETF, recently launched.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Right. So in that ETF, what we do is we take a dollar of the exposure, and we make sure that that gives you 100% exposure to the U.S. equity markets. Nice, low-cost S&P 500 exposure. And then on top of that, we stack both gold and Bitcoin. And we, again, use futures and ETFs to stack that on top. And what we do there is we don't want the maniacs running the asylum. So if we had equal dollars of Bitcoin and gold, well, Bitcoin would be fluctuating a lot more than gold. So what we do is we equal risk weight those two assets, gold and Bitcoin. What that turns out to be is about 80% gold and 20% Bitcoin. And now in the portfolio, you have your U.S. stocks as your base. Stacked upon that is your exposure to both gold and Bitcoin, where it's 80% gold, 20% Bitcoin. So those two assets are contributing the same amount of volatility to that stack on top of your U.S. stocks. So that's going to give you the ability to stick with it. It gives you this diversifying impact between actually gold and Bitcoin because they are a little bit non-correlated. And again, it doesn't let the maniacs run the asylum. It doesn't like let Bitcoin take over the whole ETF. So you're getting that exposure to this asset that has these asymmetric return potentials, but not too much so that you can stick with it and right. have it in the portfolio when it's adding a lot of value.
So in other words, if you stacked, if you took $10 and for every $10 of RSSX, you would get $10 of S&P 500.
Yep.
You would get $8 of gold
right.
and $2 of Bitcoin.
Right. So from an implementation perspective,
right.
let's say you wanted to have a 2% position in Bitcoin and an 8% position in gold, but you didn't want to sell your stocks in order to achieve that. So you'd sell 10% of your exposure to the U.S. equity market, and then you would buy in its place a 10% position in RSSX. That would give you back that 10% in S&P stocks and those 500 big stocks. Stacked upon that, you'd have 8% exposure to gold and 2% exposure to Bitcoin, which to me is a very responsible way to add both gold and Bitcoin to your portfolio and also reduce that line item risk. So, you know, you're not going to see this crazy Bitcoin going up and down or have the clients potentially asking about what's this line item, what's that line item. Rather, they're batched together. And that way, we can also take advantage of the rebalancing that can occur when one asset is going up and the other asset's going down, and you just rebalance those back to your target weights. And that balance in the equal risk sense is also something that fluctuates. It moves as the volatilities of gold and Bitcoin move. So we look back over 500 days and we say, well, what's been the volatility of Bitcoin? What's been the volatility of gold? The last 500 days, it turns out it's about four times more volatile. So you've got the $2 in Bitcoin, 20% in Bitcoin, and the 80% in gold or $2 in gold. And as that changes over time, and we would expect it's likely that Bitcoin contracts in its volatility, then your portfolio will reflect that change in volatility over the medium term.
Yeah. And how often do you rebalance?
It's rebalanced regularly, but we do a band of rebalance because the assets can be a bit volatile. What we say is there's about a 10% range around that 80-20 mix where we let, you know, if one asset's growing a little bit and gets, you know, sort of to 22% Bitcoin, then we'll cut that back and that sort of thing. So we just let it
get that. So you get that rebalancing alpha from that as well.
Yeah. And you get a little bit of drift, right? When one asset is doing well, you let it drift a little bit. It also reduces the trading costs and things like that. So it makes for a superior implementation. You don't have to do that every day. You just need to sort of move that when you've had a deviation from your original portfolio that makes sense to do so.
Right. Nice. Very nice. If another thought comes to mind, which is that, you know, diversification is best implemented while the sun is still shining. You know, exactly. you want to make the moves to diversify your portfolio while the sun is shining. And we, you know, of course, the sun is shining at the point in time that we're speaking. You don't want to wait till, you know, you wish you had crisis alpha built into your portfolio.
Of course, right.
Right, to put it mildly. You
want to buy the fire insurance before the fire.
It's difficult to make that decision to sell something that's winning in order to invest in something else that could also have an equal win or not, depending on what happens in the market. But it's much easier to make that decision when I know I'm not ditching one for the other.
Right. And in an inflationary environment, all of these assets have potential positive implications for the portfolio, right? Stocks do respond to inflation, but in a slightly different way with different lags and lead times. Gold responds to these geopolitical risks and inflationary risks and interest rates, again, in a slightly different way. And the same with Bitcoin. So you really have this three-legged stool that you're working with in order to diversify that exposure. And because we don't know what's going to happen, we don't know how inflation may manifest. We don't know how the geopolitical risks may manifest. And so in recognition of that, we want to build into the portfolio different asset classes that respond slightly differently in different time frames in order to build that resiliency. The other thing I would add is, you know, if you're concerned or you're thinking, I'm not sure, start small and operate from a position of strength. As you make allocations to some asset classes that are different, it makes sense to make sure you can stick with them. So we would argue that, you know, these assets like gold and Bitcoin are moving from fringe to foundational, given the regime shift that we're saying.
We're reaching the point in the adoption curve where it's no longer contrarian to own Bitcoin or gold. It's actually becoming prudent.
Precisely. And so we know that prudence is there. And so how should we allocate? Well, why don't we, if you're uncertain, start small. Let's start with a 10% allocation, let's say, or a 5% allocation, rather, to RSSX, thereby giving you a 1% allocation to Bitcoin and a 4% allocation to gold. Now what we can do is, okay, let's say that stack moves against us a little bit and we get a pullback in gold and Bitcoin. Well, now you re-up, you're comfortable because this was a small enough position, a de minimis enough position that you could hold it. So then you rebalance to that and add a little bit. It hasn't hurt the portfolio too much, and you're operating with that same rebalancing philosophy in your portfolio. Now, let's say it goes up and it starts to contribute. Well, now you're operating from a position of strength. The clients or allocators are seeing that positive effect in the portfolio. And so one can, as Rob Arnett says, sin a little bit and then maybe not rebalance down. Or because you're sitting on profits in the portfolio and everyone feels good about it, you could move to a 2% position once your 1.5% position in Bitcoin or your 4% position in gold moves up to, let's say, 2.5%.
Right.
And so now you add a little bit more and you're operating then from a position of strength as you build these diversifying assets into your portfolio.
Yeah. And that's completely the opposite of what typically happens with investors, right? You know, it mirrors what you're talking about actually mirrors what respected institutions, sovereigns, and allocators, how they've made the move over time into gold, of course, historically has always been sort of the bastion of this, hedging trade. But Bitcoin more recently, in more recent history, was something that they edged into gradually. And then as it proved itself more in earnest.
Yeah.
Not having to, you know, not having to trade away your S&P 500 or your, you know, whatever other betas you have in your portfolio that you might do this with or consider doing this with, without having to trade away those core holdings, it makes the decision a hell of a lot easier.
Right, because you're not subjecting yourself to that evil behavioral demon called tracking error. right? Or at least you're reducing it. Let's say, you know, stocks continue to do well and gold continues to consolidate from here. Well, if you just owned gold and it was consolidating and stocks were going up, you have foregone that exposure to stocks in order to incorporate gold.
Right, right.
The same in Bitcoin. Let's say you forego your exposure in the stocks to buy Bitcoin, and Bitcoin goes on a normal course 20 or 30% decline. And the client then looks at you and looks at the line item and says, what's going on here? And you say, well, let's add. And they see the line item, and they don't make the right decision in that moment of time. By putting it together, by rebalancing, all three asset classes get rebalanced as well. So if the S&P is doing better than the pair, then that S&P little extra is going to go fund those assets that are having their consolidation period. And then, of course, those dynamics shift. And by doing that rebalancing, you get this diversification premium in the portfolio, which again helps attenuate a lot of those behavioral vulnerabilities. And we sort of want to reduce the exposure to that tracking error, right? That's always having to say, I'm sorry for diversification.
Yeah. The funny thing is that it's been retail investors on their own, the DIY side, that have been putting Bitcoin in their portfolios.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. And not because their advisor told them to do it, but because, you know, they've been reading about it, they're getting caught up in it, they're getting caught up in the, you know, the run up that's happened. And as advisors, you know, the ongoing concern for advisors is the reputational risk. And you know, the reputational risk is reversing, right? I mean,
absolutely.
The reputational risk is no longer in owning these assets. It's in failing to understand and allocate to them before your clients ask you, why didn't you tell me about Bitcoin, or why didn't you propose it to me?
Yeah, you're exactly right. We're reaching that point in the adoption curve, as you mentioned earlier, where it's no longer contrarian or fringe. It's becoming foundational to own Bitcoin and gold. It's becoming prudent. And so when we look and see in the myriad of respected institutions, sovereign nations, and allocators that have made the move, it's now professionally safe for others to follow. You know, I think the reputational risk has shifted. It's no longer in owning these assets, but rather it's in failing to understand and allocate to them before your clients ask you why you didn't. And this is going to intensify. The Genius Act is making its way through U.S. legislation. There are a number of rumors about the U.S. starting its own Bitcoin reserve. And the number one issue that institutions had with allocating to Bitcoin was regulatory clarity.
Right.
And we're now seeing that regulatory clarity make its way through the regulatory frameworks. So removing that barrier is going to provide the opportunity for those who are in that fiduciary role. If you're on an endowment or at a pension fund, it's really hard to allocate to an asset class where you didn't have regulatory clarity. That you were an innovator, a very early adopter, if you will. And that's a very small bastion of the assets. And even with gold, if we look at the allocations to gold from major institutions, on average, it's 1%. It's been much, much higher historically. So institutions are vulnerable to these same behavioral issues as retail clients are. And again, as we've talked about, we are going through that. We're passing through those shifts in mindset on how acceptable is this to be owned in portfolios. And so I think the real risk to advisors today is in not understanding them, at least at a minimum, and then allocating to them where it's appropriate for the client and in a proportion that's appropriate for that client.
Absolutely. If you had to encapsulate it in a nutshell, Mike, what are you trying to help investors do?
Simply trying to give them a tool in order that they can add these very different diversifying asset classes to a client portfolio, mitigate that tracking error, keep them behaviorally on the rails, and actually be able to take advantage of and feel the positive effects of those asset classes within a portfolio context, improving outcomes for their clients, improving returns, reducing drawdowns, and keeping their clients longer term without compromising their core equity growth engines.
Mike, thank you so much for that primer. I think it puts gold and Bitcoin in a whole new light.
Always a pleasure, Pierre, and thank you for taking the time.